What is the crucial difference between the two skills? It is that the origami skill consists of a series of discrete actions, none of which is difficult to perform in itself. Mostly the operations are things like fold both sides into the middle. A particular team member may execute the step ineptly, but it will be clear to the next team member down the line what he is trying to do. The origami steps are self-normalizing. It is this that makes them digital. It is like the master carpenter, whose intention to flatten the nail head in the wood is obvious to his apprentice, regardless of the details of the hammer blows. Either you get a given step of the origami recipe right, or you don't. The drawing skill, by contrast, is an analog skill. Everybody can have a go, but some people copy a drawing more accurately than others, and nobody copies it perfectly. The accuracy of the copy depends, too, on the amount of time and care devoted to it, and these are continuously variable quantities. Some team members, moreover, will embellish and improve, rather than strictly copy, the preceding model. Words, at least when they're understood, are self-normalizing in the same kind of way as origami operations. In the original game of Chinese whispers, telephone, the first child is told a story or a sentence and is asked to pass it on to the next child and so on. If the sentence is less than about 7 words in the native language of all the children, there is a good chance that it will survive, unmutated, down 10 generations. If it is an unknown foreign language, so that the children are forced to imitate phonetically rather than word by word, the message does not survive. The pattern of decay down the generations is then the same as for a drawing, and it will become garbled. When the message makes sense in the children's own language and doesn't contain any unfamiliar words like phenotype or allele, it survives. Instead of mimicking the sounds phonetically, each child recognizes each word as a member of a finite vocabulary and selects the same word, although very probably pronounced in a different accent, when passing it on to the next child. Written language is also self-normalizing because the squiggles on paper, no matter how much they may differ in detail, are all drawn from a finite alphabet of, say, 26 letters.
The fact that memes can sometimes display very high fidelity due to self-normalizing processes of this kind is enough to answer some of the commonest objections that are raised to the meme-gene analogy. In any case, the main purpose of meme theory at this early stage of its development is not to supply a comprehensive theory of culture on a par with Watson-Crick genetics. My original purpose in advocating memes, indeed, was to counter the impression that the gene was the only Darwinian game in town, an impression that the selfish gene was otherwise at risk of conveying. Peter Richardson and Robert Boyd emphasize the point in the title of their valuable and thoughtful book, Not by Genes Alone, although they give reasons for not adopting the word meme itself, preferring cultural variants. Stephen Shannon's Genes, Memes, and Human History was partly inspired by an earlier, excellent book by Boyd and Richardson, Culture and the Evolutionary Process. Other book-length treatments of memes include Robert Onger's The Electric Meme, Kate Distin's The Selfish Meme, and Virus of the Mind, The New Science of the Meme, by Richard Brody. But it is Susan Blackmore in The Meme Machine who has pushed mimetic theory further than anyone. She repeatedly visualizes a world full of brains, or other receptacles or conduits, such as computers or radio frequency bands, and memes jostling to occupy them. As with genes in a gene pool, the memes that prevail will be the ones that are good at getting themselves copied. This may be because they have direct appeal, as presumably the immortality meme has for some people, or it may be because they flourish in the presence of other memes that have already become numerous in the meme pool. This gives rise to meme complexes or memeplexes. As usual with memes, we gain understanding by going back to the genetic origin of the analogy. For didactic purposes, I treated genes as though they were isolated units acting independently. But of course, they are not independent of one another, and this fact shows itself in two ways. First, genes are linearly strung along chromosomes, and so tend to travel through generations in the company of particular other genes that occupy neighbouring chromosomal loci. We doctors call that kind of linkage linkage, and I shall say no more about it because memes don't have chromosomes, alleles, or sexual recombination. The other respect in which genes are not independent is very different from genetic linkage, and here there is a good mimetic analogy.